Hello again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop WMC's live daily afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. Both presumptive Republican nominee for president Donald Trump and Democratic frontrunner Hillary Clinton called New York State home. A new Siena College poll out today says New Yorkers prefer Hillary at this point. She leads Trump by more than 20 points. And in state politics, the legislative secession in New York is coming to a rapid close, and talk of ethics reform is petering out. The Siena poll also shows a majority of New Yorkers are not happy about this and are likely not to vote to reelect their lawmakers, or so they say. And the prospects for voting for Governor Andrew Cuomo in 2018 are looking slimmer, too. We brought in Don Levy. He's the director of the Siena College Research Institute, the head man from whence these polls come. And we're going to talk about the implications of the most recent one. What do you think? Give us a call. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can also post comments on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. You can tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop, and you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Remember, it's your program, and I really want to hear from you. It would be great if you could do that. 1-800-348-2551. Listen, Don Levy, it's great to have you with us, and we know how busy you are with a brand new Siena College poll out today. So are you surprised by the fact that in New York, with two New Yorkers up against each other, Trump and Clinton, Clinton thus far is prevailing?
No, I don't find that surprising, Alan. First of all, it's great to be with you. We know that the registration numbers here in New York are about 2-1 Democrat to Republican. So any Democrat really starts off with an enormous lead in terms of the registration of their party. I think if we back up one step, what is surprising and what I think New Yorkers probably are saying is that they're not terribly happy with either of the candidates. When we look at their favorability ratings, we see that both candidates, Hillary Clinton has a 46-51 favorability, so she's 5 points underwater, as we describe it, tremendously unpopular with Republicans, and people who identify as independent or some other party, almost 60% of those voters have a negative impression of Hillary Clinton. So she comes out barely break even. Now, when she was the United States Senator from the state of New York, her favorability numbers were well above 60%, numbers similar to what we see Chuck Schumer carrying year after year. So here in New York, there was a point in time where voters had a tremendously favorable opinion of Hillary Clinton. And, you know, one issue after another, the tenor of the campaign has driven that down here in the state of New York with a 2-1 Democrat to Republican registration advantage. Very, very low.
And a couple of things. First of all, we know that every once in a while a Republican can do well in New York State. George Pataki was governor 3 times as a Republican, right?
Absolutely. There's no question about that. Although at this point in time, if we flip over to the Republican side and we look at Donald Trump, you know, only 27%, just over 1 out of 4 New Yorkers say that they have a favorable view of Mr. Trump. 68% of New Yorkers, 68% of independents, 85% of Democrats say they have an unfavorable view of Donald Trump.
Okay, then it is so fascinating to me that you have a national poll or a series of national polls which show almost no space between Trump and Clinton for president of the United States. And yet here in New York, you have the opposite.
Here in New York, it's a different story. Here in New York, we see a 21-point advantage for Mrs. Clinton over Mr. Trump at this point. But what we do share with the voters across the nation is that both candidates are pulling these negative favorability ratings. You know, we're going to move on and we're going to talk about the governor second. The question that we didn't ask in this poll relative to either of the two major candidates, Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump, would you prefer someone else? These favorability numbers say that at this point, after all the campaigning, after moving from 17 Republicans to 1, after moving from arguably 3 Democrats to what appears to be 1, that many voters, whether it's nationally or here in New York, really, in terms of their favorability ratings, are saying, I wish there was another choice, but there simply isn't. Given that, here in New York, Hillary Clinton enjoys a solid 20-point advantage.
I glanced at the CNN television monitor this morning that we have here, and it said, and I don't know whether it came from your poll or another, that that Hillary was perceived twice as favorable in among American voters as Bernie Sanders.
I didn't see that number. That surprises me.
That's huge.
Because I have not heard that.
Yeah. Well, I may have made it up, or I may have been traveling through the room at too fast a speed.
We asked another question, really, just and we didn't highlight it in the press release, actually. We asked the question, we split the sample, and we asked one half of the sample, who do you think would be the best president out of Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump? And then we flipped it around and we asked the other half of the people in the poll, of those two candidates, who would be the worst president? And there actually, we were wondering whether we were going to see a mirror image on that. And in fact, we really did. Again, about 2-1, 55% of New Yorkers said that they thought that Hillary Clinton would be the better president, the best president out of that choice. When asked about the worst, Donald Trump's numbers rose up to 60% of New Yorkers feel as though of that choice, he would be the worst. So it's a long way to November.
It is indeed.
You know, certainly we will contest this, and it'll be fought out state by state. Mr. Trump certainly has said that he wants to put New York in play. At this point, our poll doesn't show that. But what our poll does show is that New Yorkers tend to say that the country's moving in the wrong direction. And they also say, by a small majority, that they have an unfavorable view of Hillary Clinton.
Wow. And is it your view that the third parties are going to play a role in all of this, or is this all being introduced just too late for your latest poll?
Well, it certainly was not included in our latest poll. You know, we will now take a look at the Libertarian candidate. He's going to have ballot access across the country.
50 states, yeah.
So we will certainly include Gary Johnson here when we start polling New Yorkers, because every New Yorker will have an opportunity to walk into the poll and cast that vote if they so choose. As far as the speculation about a yet-to-be-mentioned third-party candidate, it really doesn't appear to be very likely. We had, you know, months ago taken a look at Michael Bloomberg, for example, who polled quite well against those two candidates here in New York. But it really doesn't – I mean, we know that a third-party candidate won't get ballot access across the country. If they can succeed in some markets, they would have an effect.
Now, we're going to take calls in just 2 minutes, so we're going to take a short break and come back. But I wanted to ask you very quickly about the Andrew Cuomo business. We're showing that people like his performance as governor, right?
Well, what we're showing actually is people like him.
Right.
His favorability numbers continue to be a majority. 54% of New Yorkers have a favorable view of him. But his job performance, not as much.
Oh, how so?
A majority of New Yorkers say that his job performance is no better than fair or poor. They're given the choice of excellent, good, fair, or poor. Only 42% of New Yorkers give him an excellent or good job performance,
wow,
whereas a majority say no better than fair or poor. Yet, a solid majority, 54%, and really kind of unchanged over the last several months, regardless of all the various corruption allegations, discussions, you know, some investigations that are starting to take place, people associated with the executive branch. Still, New Yorkers like him. Where we saw a dip that is, of course, interesting to the people on the second floor.
Second floor where the governor resides.
The generic reelect question. You know, this is the question where we say in the upcoming election for governor, would you vote for Andrew Cuomo or would you prefer someone else? Now, we don't say anyone else, but that's clearly where a person's mind goes. And here we saw that the governor's, and we call this the generic reelect number, is down to 42%. 49% say someone else.
But of course, the issue is who that someone else would be.
Yes. When that someone else becomes an actual person, You know, they may not fare as well against the governor. But in in political parlance, and you're familiar with this, there was a point in time where if you worked for a candidate and that generic reelect number fell below 50%, there started to be some concern. We're a little bit more willing to let that number be in the 40s now. But at 42%, it's just above the point where there would be a real concern amongst the Cuomo people.
Well, I was just going to tell you, I knew his father very well, and I've talked to him over the years. And one of the things they both said is, if you're under 50%, you're in trouble.
Well, certainly, I think at this point in time, there is concern. You know, the job performance is below 50. The generic reelect is below 50. We did ask a new question at this point in time. We asked New Yorkers to say in the same series of questions about the governor, regardless of whether you agree with him or not, regardless of whether you like him or not, would you describe Andrew Cuomo as an ethical public official or not?
And
we found that a very, very strong 60% of New Yorkers, overwhelmingly Democrat, overwhelmingly independent and other. And interestingly, a break-even point amongst Republicans say that Andrew Cuomo is an ethical public official. Only 30% of New Yorkers said he is not.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. I need you to call right now, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. I want to hear from you.
Support for WAMC comes from Stemmel Stringed Instruments, downtown Amherst and Poughkeepsie, providing sales, service, and rentals of violins, violas, cellos, and bows. Restorations and apparels open Tuesday through Saturday, stemmelstring.com. Shannon Rose Design, Saratoga Springs, New York, working to help companies and organizations express their identities through corporate branding, web design and development, and graphic design for almost three decades. ShannonRose.com. Habitat Post and Beam, South Deerfield, Massachusetts, designing and manufacturing energy-efficient post and beam homes and additions throughout the Northeast since 1972. PostandBeam.com. The Wild Center, announcing the new Wild Walk, a higher view of the natural world with 1,000 feet of elevated bridges. WildCenter.org for details. Poughkeepsie Farm Project, now scheduling spring and summer farm visits for children, teens, and adults. FarmProject.org. And Zenkel Music Center at Skidmore College, presenting Jazz Institute concerts by Ron Carter, Golden Striker Trio, Bill Charlap Quintet, and the Skidmore Jazz Faculty. June 28th through July 7th, skidmore.edu/summer.
Back with Professor Don Levy, one of the best pollsters in the country. And there's a new Siena poll out today that says New Yorkers prefer Hillary at this point, and she leads Trump by more than 20 points. I'm not surprised by that. He's not surprised by that. But now let's go to David in New Paltz. Okay, David, you're on. Go, David.
Yes, I am very enthusiastic about Donald Trump's vision for New York. He wants to take Washington, D.C., and make Manhattan the District of Columbia. And he wants to move the White House to his penthouse. And he wants to move the Senate and the House of Representatives to around the United Nations Plaza.
So I take it, David, your tongue is firmly in your cheek.
No, if you read his book, he says exactly that. And he also says that Washington, D.C. is a southern town, a backward southern town. And for him to move into the White House is like moving into a gentrified house that hasn't been upgraded yet.
Okay, so what's your question for the pollster, David?
My question is that... with this new vision for the Empire State, the new Empire State of New York. When have you heard the New York State referred to as the Empire State again, making New York great again and making the nation great again?
Okay, just to establish.
Actually has a vision. a vision that has taken hold in the minds of Americans.
Okay, very good. Don, do you want to respond to this at all?
Well, the one thing I would say is that, you know, a classic polling question that we ask all the time, we ask it, you know, our friends across the country ask it, you know, we ask virtually every respondent, is the United States on the right track or is it headed in the wrong direction?
Right.
You know, and sort of if you picture a battleship and you picture the United States as a battleship, you know, is the battleship tracking in the way you want it to track, or do we need to turn this thing around? And when we talk about vision, you know, in a sense, that's the question we're talking about. You know, and interestingly, we find that here in New York, when we ask that question, only 34% of New Yorkers say that they think the country's on the right track. 57%, so nearly 6 out of 10 New Yorkers say they think the country's moving in the wrong direction. So clearly we see that Donald Trump is a candidate who is clearly aligned with the sentiment that the battleship has got to be turned. It's got to be turned relative to so many different issues, in his opinion. You know, so that no doubt resonates with many voters here in New York, many voters around the country. You know, whether or not that going with that would be some sort of relocation of the Capitol, I think, is interesting. But the point in terms of voters' attitudes, their minds, and how they're going to decide between these two candidates, I think the idea of whose vision for America most closely aligns with theirs is going to be important in their decision. And despite the fact here in New York that Hillary Clinton has a 20-point lead, that a majority of New Yorkers simultaneously think that something's got to be done. The battleship has got to get moved.
Okay, thank you very much, David. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. James in Hudson. All right, James, you're on.
Hi, I'm here.
Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just I missed part of the beginning of the program, and the train's going to come by. Lovely. This is wonderful, Hudson. I'll be quick about it then.
I love Hudson.
Poll after poll after poll shows that Bernie Sanders has it in the big election, which we have to worry about, has a larger lead than Hillary Clinton does in the general, and yet she'll probably be the candidate, most likely. So,
wait a second, James. Other polls also show that she gets a lot more votes, not in terms of Trump, but in terms of her versus Bernie. And I voted for Bernie, but you can't lie with that one. James, are you there?
Yeah, I'm still here. No, the train is actually being quiet now.
Okay.
We're on the same side there. I did, and I did support him in his points, but I do think that, you know, most of the national polls do show him ahead.
Okay, wait, stop right there. I want to go to Don Levy on that one because...
No, I want to listen to him.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I want to go to Don Levy on that one because I think there's a lot to be said here. Go ahead, Don.
Well, again, I think that we've seen many, many polls, national polls, that show some substance to the idea that Bernie Sanders is polling more strongly against Donald Trump than is Hillary Clinton. There's two different ways that I can answer this question. One is the strategic way, which, as we know, we elect a president based on the Electoral College, and national polls tend to be a little bit of a beauty contest, but the real nuts and bolts of an election are the states that contribute to the Electoral College. So we really have to take a look at those 8 to 10 battleground states, the Florida, the Pennsylvania, the Ohio, those states where more than likely once again the election will be decided. And in those states, in some cases we've seen those polls between Clinton and Sanders be very close. In some cases she's won, and in some cases he has won. Regardless of any of that.
Can I ask one more quick question?
Sure.
Go ahead. Go ahead, James. Go. What?
I'm gonna stop.
Hello? James, are you there? Okay. I just wanted to point out, James is off now. And that is that Hillary, of course, has been beaten up for years by the Republicans. A free ride has come to Bernie. when you think about it, because they didn't think Bernie was going to be the candidate. In fact, Trump has tried to divide and conquer between Sanders and Hillary, but it hasn't. But Sanders was never going to be the candidate, according to them, and therefore they saved all their ammunition for Hillary. So why wouldn't you think Hillary would suffer from that?
Well, absolutely. You know, we haven't seen, nor probably will we see, you know, the full ire of the Trump campaign. You know, the PACs associated or aligned with the Trump campaign unleashing negative ads on Bernie Sanders. We haven't seen that as yet. And Hillary Clinton has faced, you know, virtually every attack, every criticism that's possible now for over 20 years. So that does, in fact, drive her negatives up. I mean, the other thing I'll say, though, we were talking slightly a little bit off air about a national poll that we conducted where we asked people about 50 different issues, everything from things like same-sex marriage to nuclear weapons to terror, the economy of the United States, and we asked whether voters thought we were moving on the right track or the wrong direction. And there we found that on 50 issues, people who said that they were for Hillary Clinton thought the country was moving on the right track on 37, so almost invariably. The Trump supporters thought we were moving on in the wrong direction on virtually every issue, 49 out of 50. Bernie fell kind of in the middle. Bernie supporters thought that we were moving on the right track about 20 of the issues, but moving in the wrong direction on slightly more. So Bernie voters are more of a, you know, they're interested in change, whereas Hillary Clinton is interested more in continuing the present more efficiently, more effectively, perhaps, in her view, than is the current president.
So what was the one? The Trump supporters thought we were wrong on 49, but supported one of them. What was that?
The only one was it was phrased as appropriately protecting the voting rights of all Americans.
So in other words, it was basically a reactionary position, because we all know that the people who have been screwed by the system are looking for redress, and there the Trump supporters are against it.
Right, absolutely. And so the Trump voter in this particular poll, when asked about these 50 issues, again and again and again said, no, we're moving in the wrong direction. We're moving in the wrong direction. So they want change. You know, and Trump has done an excellent job of recasting that idea as making America great again. So clearly he's saying we're going to change. We're going to change in every different possible direction. Whereas Hillary Clinton has ended up running on a ticket of we have to protect the Obama legacy. And she, in effect, is arguing, without being completely clear on every single component, that she's going to simply do a better job with that agenda than the president has.
So, Professor Levy, let me ask you this. Based on what you are seeing and the fact that the polling, the national polling, is coming up with virtually no distinction between voting for Hillary and voting for the Donald, that there's something going on in this country. Is it a class war?
You know, I think that class war is almost perhaps too simple a distinction, because we're no longer a society that you would just say is lower class, middle class, and upper class. There are so many other cuts and fissures to that sort of analysis. Certainly we're seeing, and I think, you know, if you refer to these polls that we see that appear to be a plus two for Clinton over Trump, at a time when, and we were talking before we went on the air, and you pointed out quite rightly that certainly I was not the one person who a year ago said that Donald Trump would be the nominee. We didn't see it coming.
You or anybody else.
Me or anyone else. But what he has done such an incredibly brilliant job of doing is focusing on this this sense of dissatisfaction,
malaise,
that cuts across a working class voter,
sure,
who feels as though their job is gone,
sure,
high middle or upper class voter who feels as though there's too much regulation, there's too many people taking shots at my business, a voter who may very well have a view that dates to the welfare state animosity of the Reagan years and thinks that there are undeserving poor who are taking advantage of the system. It's a coalition, but it's a coalition based on dissatisfaction across so many issues.
Don Levy, do any of those go to the Libertarian Party? For example, those people who are saying, we know a lot of Republicans don't like Trump for a lot of reasons. Are they likely to bail out and go? This is a very important question for me, because in analyzing these elections, we got to decide whether the third parties, Jill Stein, or will get Bernie supporters, whether the Libertarians will get Trump supporters. What do you make of that?
Well, I think that in theory, and certainly I listened to Gary Johnson espousing that view, there are folks who are looking for a socially progressive, fiscally conservative party.
And
that's the Libertarian Party. And that they're saying that there are Republican voters, or there are voters on the right, who simply can't countenance, they can't accept some of the views of Trump himself or of that the Republican Party has stood for. And there are some people on the left who say, I can't go with all the various programs that the Democrats are supporting on the economic side. But yet, I think that we remain a two-party nation. There is just a sense amongst voters that if I cast a vote for one, not for one of the two leading parties, that I'm in effect, it's a protest vote, it's a wasted vote. And still they're going to be sitting there going, who do I not want to be president? There's going to be an awful lot of people voting based on who they're more concerned, who they dislike more. And so a vote, for Gary Johnson, they may construe as a vote for the end up being a vote for the candidate that they least want to be president.
When I was in the sixth grade, my mother told me I was a Democrat. She also told me I was Jewish before that. So I think that's part of what my kids always say, what is political socialization? And I always say, that's when your mother tells you what you are. So I think that there's a certain amount of religiosity almost in the picks on which party you're going to support and believe in. Okay, let's go to Barry in Scotia. Barry in Scotia, you're on.
Hi. What I'm interested in is the fact that about socialists has gone from 3% of the Democratic vote to getting 40%, 6% of all votes cast. And yet the Democratic establishment wants to shove him aside and say that he's interfering with Hillary's chances and so forth. He gets the people who vote for him as supportive get called Bernieites on this station. And I think that this is one of the most amazing stories of this year and has been neglected and ignored by the press. The Democratic establishment does not like him, and even many liberals want to forestall the rare chance we get to vote on Election Day by saying the election should be decided or it's over.
So Barry, I guess you're talking to a guy who voted for Trump. Excuse me, who voted for Bernie? I think that your allegations that we're prejudiced is really
I'm sure you think so, but why don't you let the pollster answer instead of preempting and act like a shock jock?
Thank you. We are going to do exactly that. Go ahead, Don.
Right.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. It's an amazing story to take a senator from Vermont. Who described himself as a Democratic Socialist, who was not a member of the Democratic Party, represented Vermont as an independent, and that he's won certainly a shockingly high percentage of the primaries and caucuses, at least shockingly high to the Democratic establishment, is a tremendously provocative story this year. The Democratic Party obviously is faced, well, where do we go from here? I think that, you're obviously following the news. The Democratic Party is looking to put this primary process behind them and to figure out some way to take what was supposed to be the Hillary Clinton coronation. Remember the beginning
sure.
of the primary season?
As
when,
was for Bush, too.
And we were talking about how, it'll be good that she'll be challenged a little bit, that she just won't coast through the primary process, and that O'Malley and Sanders will at least make her go out there and campaign a little bit. Well, it turned into something entirely different.
Sure.
But
what's that all about? In other words, is it the fact that Bernie is more core value in terms of the rank and file of the Democratic Party?
I think that, again, Bernie has lit a fire under some of the dissatisfaction that exists on the left, whether it be a rigged system, whether it be income inequality, whether there's been aspects of the criminal justice system, that Bernie Sanders has been saying things that folks that have been loyal members of the Democratic voting bloc for years have said, you know, we just haven't done enough to
gotcha.
Take care of these problems.
Well, thank you very much, Barry. Appreciate it. Hang up. Okay, let's go to Vincent. No, we're going to take a short break and we'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from the Black Sheep, downtown Amherst, a New York-style delicatessen and European-style all-butter scratch bakery, caterer, and cafe offering fair trade coffee. BlackSheepDeli.com. The Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, celebrating Francis Day with tours, exhibits, art making, music, and more. Saturday, July 9th, noon to 6 p.m. Skidmore.edu/Tang for details. Kentix Construction, specializing in deep energy retrofits, passive house, zero energy homes, and historic restorations, serving Western Massachusetts for over 25 years. KentixConstruction.com. Clipcentric Albany, a local video services division of Clipcentric, producing video advertisements for businesses throughout the capital region for web, mobile, and TV. Albany.clipcentric.com. Careers in Transition, LLC, Albany, Dr. Tom Denham, providing career guidance, testing, job strategies, interview preparation, LinkedIn lessons, resume, and cover letter writing. Careers in Transition, LLC.com. And Interim Healthcare, celebrating 45 years of in-home care, supports the Mohawk Hudson Land Conservancy's Father's Day Outdoor Adventure Outing. MohawkHudson.org.
Thank you, Zachary. Appreciate your bringing us back to reality. We'll go to Vincent in Goshen. Okay, Vincent, you're on.
Yes, Dr. Shartok from Sharon, Connecticut, to call. The comment that I have is addressed to Professor Levitt.
Levy.
Levy, I'm sorry.
That's right.
Thank you. It really has several questions. Professor Levy, what is striking to me is there seems to be a pollution of polling data, but what I notice is a dramatic absence of anything regarding the sample size, the current difficulties of getting respondents with cell phones, the percentage of rejections, and no distinction between, at the least, between urban and rural voters. Of course, other considerations in terms of ethnic groups. But I don't want to overdo the methodology, but I just am stunned by the lack of definition of sample size, particularly when we're talking about national samples and the difficulties in terms of contacting cell phone respondents and the number of rejections of respondents who get calls from entities that they can't identify. And I wish you would address that.
Okay.
I appreciate that.
Fair
Thank
enough,
you.
Vincent. Good question. Let's go. Don Levy.
Well, it's a fabulous question. And really, I think you're absolutely right in your first comment that you've hit on many, many questions simultaneously. You know, polling is both art and science. How you go about selecting the people that you're going to speak to, because what we're looking for always is a small sample of people who are sufficiently representative of the large universe that we want to describe. I'll first say that if you're going to consume polls, if you're going to read them, you want to take a look at polls done by reputable organizations that will publish, as we do, as other academically situated polls do. Here's how many people we spoke to. Here's how we did it. Here's what percentage were on land, what percentage were on cells. And you want to have people that are representative like that. Unfortunately, sometimes there's this seemingly insatiable thirst for polling data. And there are some entities that will publish a poll that was a non-probability sample, that was all web-based, that there was no care made in terms of the sample construction, and treat it as equally valid as a poll that is transparently reporting exactly who and how we spoke to people.
But Vincent's question, which is excellent, yeah, and I know others have also, is let's assume for a second, here comes the art part done. Let's assume that we think that kids, young people, don't have landlines. They have cell phones. Then you have to decide, okay, what part of our sample are the cell phones that we randomly dial or that we have lists of? What part are we going to use? Because obviously, if you use it more, then the young people who may be for Bernie, for example, are going to have their say. But then we know historically that those young people say one thing and then don't come out and vote. So now political scientist Don Levy has to figure out what to do.
Well, again, that is an art to make those decisions. Now, we at Ciena have progressively increased the percentage of our calls that we are completing via cell phone, and we do that almost on a quarterly basis. We up the percent.
How do you decide which cell phones to call?
The cell phones are called in a pre-election, so long as we're far enough away from the election where the likelihood to vote is a little bit harder to determine,
right.
We randomly generate those numbers,
right,
based on the percentage of cell phone numbers that exist within the different regions of the state. So that's a known. Cell phones clearly are harder to call. You have to keep your polls shorter. You have all sorts of frustrations when you reach someone who may have a New York cell phone number, but they live in Arizona.
Exactly.
So they are extremely problematic. And we know, and you're absolutely right, that the overall response rate now is down into the high single digits, 8%, 9%. When we pull an initial sample,
yep,
that's the percent of people that we end up speaking to. The great test always for this type of political polling is, are the people that you speak to similar or different from the people who end up voting? So we always get, you know, our final exam, if you will, always takes place on election day. There are other avenues that people are pursuing right now, given the use of big data, which in some ways some of the political campaigns, you know, went to that first. You know, so it's the question of, if we know enough about you and we know how people like you have voted in the past, can we predict how you're going to vote this time without even asking you questions? So there's a big data approach now to political prediction that doesn't even involve polling, but rather, if we know enough about you, your habits, the magazines you buy, the websites you go to make predictions. It's not something that we don't do that kind of work at Ciena. We continue to call people up. The other thing that you have to always know about polling is, even after we've completed our 800 calls, our 1,000 calls, then we take and we make a decision as to how we're going to weight those respondents. Perhaps we've spoken to too many people who are, above the age of 65 years of age and live in Western New York, versus people who are young and live in New York City.
I understand.
You know, so we constantly are looking at how representative our sample is vis-a-vis census numbers, vis-a-vis exit polls, vis-a-vis historic voting patterns.
Which, Don, is why pollsters get it wrong every once in a while.
Right.
Absolutely.
They guess wrong.
I mean, we always issue our numbers with a certain margin of error. It's a great debate that I have with my colleagues in the field, whether you weight your sample to who turned out the last time, who exists within the population, or
whether they're lying
to
you,
or who you think's going to turn out the next time. Lying.
But for Professor Levy, it seems like a big stretch in terms of the probabilistic expansion, which you have clearly described. It seems to me, when you have a lower response rate, for one, and then in fact you have to probabilistically expand that, and you have relatively small populations, it seems to me just problematic. And I appreciate your technical
Hey, Vincent, I'm so sorry. You got five guys behind you. I want to try to get everybody a chance. Thanks for the great call. Appreciate it. All right, we'll go to Rick in Albany. Rick in Albany, you're on.
Hello, Alan. How are you?
Good.
Good show. Good show. I have a question and a comment, but one quick food for thought. I work, have been employing 18 to 25-year-olds for 30 years.
Right.
Most of them will not answer their cell phone if they don't recognize a number, just so you know. So you're not going to get a lot of them to answer polls because it's just a practice. It's just the way they think. But back to those kids, this is the first time in 30 years of me employing these kids that I've seen such enthusiasm for the election because of Bernie Sanders. There was some enthusiasm for Obama the first time around, but nothing like this. I've got busboys and kids who have never even thought about voting.
Okay, so Rick.
That are excited. Rick, my question is, are we seeing possibly the future face of the Democratic Party looking for more of a European model of government, or is Bernie just a fluke?
Well, let me start because Don is pondering it. Let me start by saying, A, you certainly are looking at some people who are going to become the future of the Democratic Party. But B, I often say somebody becomes a public radio listener when they get a mortgage. In other words, things change when you acquire. So we can't be absolutely sure that everybody who may fall into a have-not category in the beginning is going to be there when they're 45 years of age.
No, of course. But these are kids that actually went out to vote in primaries that never, ever, I mean, I've never had kids who worked for me talk about going to vote for the primary. They were all on board. It was
okay.
Very interesting.
Okay, Don Levy?
Well, I will say certainly it is a challenge to get those voters, those young voters, to take our calls. But, you know, whereas it may be difficult, we certainly get them to speak to us. And we certainly know that those people who have an interest in politics, if they're turning out to vote, it raises the likelihood that when they look at their cell phone and they see a number, you know, to whatever extent they're familiar with us, if they will answer the phone and they hear, hi, this is Don from the Siena College Research Institute, more and more people have heard of us. If they're interested in politics, then they tend to take the survey. We invariably end up weighting up the young voters because they are harder to reach. I think that's true of every pollster, whether it be us, our friends at other colleges, national entities like Pew, Gallup, CBS, NBC, whoever the case may be. So it's a threat to our reliability in that we're always weighting those people up. But although the folks, the young people who work for you may not be inclined to answer the phone, rest assured there are plenty who do and do speak to us.
Rick, we're going to let you go. Thank you. And we'll go to Bruce in Kingston. I'm trying to get everybody in here. Bruce in Kingston, you're on.
Yeah, I have two questions for both of you, but a quick comment to frame it. I think Trump may have reached his heights and may begin to fade in spite of the fact that he's been so masterly as a kind of carnival barker, getting everybody to come, so many to come into his tent or the political tent, you know, come and see a Mexican rapist, come and see a disgusting reporter, come and see a crooked Hillary. So the question is, on this issue of the bathrooms and the transgender, you know, it doesn't matter for me, you know, whether it's right or wrong right now. I think the timing is terrible because I think it hands an issue, a wedge issue at that, to the Republicans and Trump. And that's one question. Do you think that is true?
Which? What hands? Which issue becomes a wedge issue?
The fact of the transgender and the bathrooms.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think that is a...
Okay, Bruce, I'm going to cut you off. I'm going to cut you off.
Everything else is at stake.
Bruce.
Question very quickly.
No, very quickly, let me tell you. We're going to get Don Levy to answer that question because we have a whole line out behind you, and I want to give everybody a chance. Go ahead, Don.
Very, very quickly, do you think it would help to call Trump, you know, Trump the... Donald Trump, the garbage dump, just the way he says crooked Hillary and sure. Little Marco.
Okay, Bruce, we got you. Sick. Bruce, I'm going to have to cut you off if you don't let Don answer the question. Go ahead, Don.
Well, certainly there are so many issues in the campaign and issues that we would describe as social and cultural, although there are small groups of people who are extremely you know, adamant about their feelings towards the social and cultural issues. Typically, the issues of the economy and foreign affairs tend to control the larger voting blocks. So I think we're going to see ultimately the issue component of the campaign waged on those. As far as, you know, the negative campaigning, it'll be a difficult choice for the Clinton campaign to decide whether she and or just her surrogates are going to go negative on Donald Trump.
Thank you, Bruce from Kingston. Good call. Let's go to Jake in Albany. All right, Jake, you're on the air.
Hey, how's it going? I just wanted to ask a few quick questions. First of all, I just want to say that I'm 18 years old. You know, I'm a first-time voter, and I go to school up at St. Lawrence. But just my question is, basically, I see all these people, all these younger people in college with me and all across the nation who aren't getting out to the polls to vote simply because, you know, they don't have the means to do so. And in order to do so, you know, you have to fill out an absentee ballot. There's all these hard things to do. So really, I'm asking, what is holding us back as a nation in 2016 from keeping up, like, from requiring these polls to still be filled out in person? Why can't we just do it from, say, our cell phones, which you guys have been talking about this episode?
Okay, very good. Jake, let's go to Don. Don.
Well, it's a great question. I mean, clearly there are some folks who feel as though we should make voting far easier. That sounds like the Democratic thing to do.
It does. Democratic with a big D.
With a big D, yes. Yeah. And, you know, but from a strategic point of view, limiting the size of the voting public has been very successful for some people in getting into office. In fact, there are those who feel as though one purpose of negative campaigning is to keep people away from the polls so that you know what the score is, what the intended score is between the most adamant of your voters and the most adamant of the other person's voters. And if you can keep the people like a young voter who's new away from the polls, you have a better prediction. That's not Democratic. I'm not supporting that
right.
view, but that is a strategy that some people have used. I, for one, personally, you know, I think I agree with you that we should make voting far easier, although there are some and some who hold major public office that continue to talk about what they believe to be elements of voter fraud. So they
that seems a little bit bureaucratic.
They argue that you know, we have to protect the sanctity of the vote. I think that
right.
certainly within the near future, near maybe in a historic sense, we will see far you know, easier. If we can do our banking online, there's got
right,
to be
yeah,
a way that we can vote
online.
Okay. Hey, Jake, thank you very much. Let's go to Doe in Wendell. Hi, Doe.
Hi. I want to know who calls when you get a phone call from a pollster. Do they ask your age, your education thing, in case, you know, some of these pollsters might be slanting the bias to get their answers that they want?
Well, certainly a reputable pollster will identify who they are. And they will not only ask the substantive questions about who you're going to vote for, where do you stand on the issues, but quite clearly ask the demographic questions. And we do that so as to make sure that we get a representative sample. Because we do that, we want to speak to the appropriate number of people. Insofar as we haven't, then we want to be able to statistically adjust. That's what we call weighting. You know, certainly just one other little thing about pollsters. You want to make sure when a pollster calls you, if you're going to answer their questions, that they've identified who they are, where they're from, and let you know that if you have any questions about the poll itself, here's a phone number that you can call back to get those questions answered. You want to make sure you differentiate between a pollster who's reputable and someone who might be saying that they're a pollster, but they're in reality working for one of the campaigns or for some advocacy group.
Yeah, and sometimes they have these phony polls, push polls,
right.
pull polls. Did you know that Hillary Clinton was not nice to her dog? So then you know you got one of those phony Maloney things. Though we're out of time, I thank you so much for calling.
Yeah, thank you so much. Bye.
As I say, we're out of time. Thanks, everybody, for calling in. Don Levy of the Siena College Research Institute. You're terrific, and thanks. I hope you'll come back many times.
Pleasure being here.
Okay.
Anytime.
Support for the Vox Pop comes from Tom McRae, Edward Jones Financial Advisor, One University Drive, Amherst, Massachusetts. Member, SIPC, Edward Jones, Making Sense of Investing, edwardjones.com/Tom McRae. A.D. George Construction for over 25 years, serving the Pioneer Valley's residential construction needs, remodeling, additions, kitchens, bathrooms, porches, home office space, and more, from the design and planning to its completion. 413-256-6752. The New York State Bar Association's Lawyer Referral and Information Service, celebrating 35 years, serving the public. 800-342-3661. And the Whistling Kettle, Troy and Balsen Spa, offering a selection of savory crepes, including the Farmer's Crepe with pesto, bacon, spinach, artichoke hearts, and fresh mozzarella. TheWhistlingKettle.com. Thanks again, everybody, for joining us on the Vox Pop. Remember, the conversation continues online at WMC.org/VoxPop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Susie Chekai. Our producers, Jessica Blaustein-Marshall. I'm Alan Chartok. Stay tuned now for a news update.